Welcome to Radio Disclosure. Now, don't touch that dial, because today it's all about UFOs, and we have Jim Maroney with us. And Jim is the head of the Alberta UFO Study Group, and they have an online presence that takes reports from folks that see and report UFOs and unidentified flying objects. He's also an author. He has two books, one recent book that's out that we're going to be talking about, and it's coming up on Radio Disclosure. As a shortwave radio listener, you know there's no such thing as a good indoor antenna. If you're looking for an antenna that allows you to pull in those distant signals and also gets rid of the atmospheric noise, you need a good outdoor antenna. But in a lot of cases, folks can't have an outdoor antenna. Now you can. Transworld Antennas is the name of the company. The website is transworldantennas.com. Go to their site and check out the TW2010 or the 4040 or the 8080 for that matter. These are all antennas that will increase the sensitivity of your shortwave radio. It gets the antenna that receives outside of the indoor environment, away from electrical noise, the pops and cracks and things that go on inside a building, and they hide. The TW2010 just literally disappears wherever you put it. Folks don't see it. And it's a good antenna for your receiver. It's a good match for any shortwave radio. If you're having difficulty pulling in those distant signals, or if you're looking for a portable antenna that you can take with you wherever you go, you want it to be low profile, you want it to be stealth, where you can set it up and nobody really knows it's an antenna, this is the antenna for you. Go to the website, transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com. And get a TW2010, a 4040, or an 8080, whichever model best suits your receiving needs. You'll be glad you did. Transworldantennas.com. Our guest today is Jim Maroney. And Jim is the author of a book called The Extraterrestrial Answer Book. It's a UFOs, alien abductions, and the coming ET presence, which is something that keeps raising its head. People keep asking questions, and it seems like we're on a unavoidable collision course with this subject. Hello, Jim, and how are you today?
Hi, Ted. Oh, I'm wonderful today. Thank you very much for the opportunity to come on your show, and I'm talking to you from Las Vegas, actually, so I'm out here enjoying the sunshine and partaking of a few of the festivities, so yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Well, let me ask you a question. You are in charge of, I just had the website up, is it like the Alberta Reporting Center, or how does that work?
Yeah, it's like a state reporting center, essentially, that I've put up a website to just try. It's been operating now, nearly 20 years, but I just took over about 10 years ago to try and help provide a venue for people to call in and report UFO sightings, because there really wasn't anything else to kind of collate that information. And in Canada, our attempt is to try and gather that information nationally and then put it to a national reporting center, so we have a fairly definitive way of assessing, you know, the number of sightings and the number of reports that come in through various centers throughout Canada.
Yeah, I think the keeping records like that is so important, and yet it seems like even the governments don't seem to pay much attention to it. It's almost as if it's, I don't know if it's because it's being covered up or they're just not bright enough to understand the importance of it. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think that governments right now realistically have a lot of financial issues to concern themselves with. And from a political standpoint, I obviously believe that this is really something that's incredibly important to every single person on this planet, you know, and a lot of people really want better information on this. And one of the challenges for us, on all of us who are searching for good information, is the risk of fault is the struggle to find good information, because there's so much bad information that's out there currently. Governments themselves are really struggling with how to kind of deal with this. Now, in some cases, they actually have gone ahead and released UFO files, like, you know, the United Kingdom has gone ahead and done that. Denmark has gone ahead and done that. Canada has gone ahead and done that. So, you know, we've released thousands and thousands and thousands of files on the subject of UFOs and UFO reports and evidence surrounding UFOs. So the evidence is there. And it could also be debated as to whether or not, you know, the governments are showing us all of that. But to get back to your question, I think the governments themselves are really struggling with how to kind of deal with it. The idea of just disclosing their reporting, you know, this is what stuff that we're aware of, is one thing. But setting up a policy and a procedure that could evaluate this evidence on its own merits and then provide reports and direction to the public, is this what the public really wants? The public wants to, you know what's going on. What should we be aware of? Is there something we should be concerned about? Those are some really fundamental questions. And yet, you know, if I was sitting as a politician and I wanted to talk about UFOs, I'd probably be ending my career pretty abruptly, because the way the politics is set up right now, people look at weaknesses, basically, and they'll just try and, you know, skewer you, and you won't really have much of a political career. So I think a lot of politicians are really quite fearful of taking on the whole UFO subject because of the negative stigma that historically has been around it. But obviously that's changing as more and more reputable people are coming forward and stating that not only is the evidence clearly indicating that there's a phenomenon here that we have to be aware of and that we should be putting resources towards, but that the public is demanding more accountability in that area as well.
Well, let me ask you this question. Do you think that we're in a situation where the governments are documenting, not necessarily publishing what they document, but are they just in the, are they to the point of just documenting, or do you think they've got this thing figured out and now it becomes a challenge to try to disclose it?
Wow, that's a really good question. You know, I'm going to take more of a radical approach to this, and that is the fact that I haven't seen a whole lot of evidence on my end of things that the government really knows what it's doing, and that could be just the fact that maybe only a small component
that
of the government knows what it's doing.
That runs across the board, though. I mean, in terms of the government not knowing what they're doing, it's not just in the realm of UFOs. This has to do with just about every aspect of society at this point. So being that they maybe not know what they're doing in regards to UFOs, I guess that would be pretty standard equipment, don't you think?
You're right, you know, and in other words, it's quite disjointed about how, you know, which departments are doing what. It seems to me that most of our elected officials don't have a clue about what's happening around the UFO phenomenon. The military probably has an awareness of what's happening with respect to the phenomenon. At least some parts of the military are. And that's, you know, the only way I could really describe it in that sense. Yet, I really do believe that public pressure really has to come to bear on politicians to, you know, put pressure on the military to disclose more information about what they have on the subject of UFOs. It seems that the military has already classified much of this information as, they said, well, this is highly secretive, you know, we're not going to disclose information, we're worried about public panic, those types of things. And yet the evidence, the scientific evidence that we have to date doesn't support this idea of public panic at all. We know that when, you know, the vast, vast majority of people can easily handle, information that, you know, we're not the only life forms in the universe. And I think that that's something that a lot of us are ready for.
Well, you know, I guess one of the things that's my pet peeve when it comes to extraterrestrial activity or UFOs and all of that, to be honest with you, is just the nutcases. And what I mean by that is, you know, there are lunatics running around. You know, I've been floated up from my bedroom, and I'm not saying that this has not happened to people, okay? I'm not saying that folks have not been abducted, that that's all a bunch of hooey. I'm just saying that we've got some real drama kings and queens running around making all kinds of claims, you know, and, you know, it kind of reminds me back, and I don't know if you can remember this, but, you know, back in the in the late 60s, early 70s, all the people that were into the channeling act, they were channeling extraterrestrials. And I mean, some of this stuff was so, it was just beyond ridiculous. I mean, it would insult a moron. Okay. And, you know, and the thing of it is I think this has really added, of course, this happens in every circle, in every realm. I mean, you go into religion, you've got people who are legitimate, and then you've got nutcases, you know, and the same thing with UFOs. But the UFO nutcases seem to be extreme. They want to attract attention to themselves. They cook up stories that aren't true. They lead a whole lot of people down a path. And I think when it all boils down, then people who are legitimately trying to investigate and report, people who have actually had experiences, as far out as those experiences may be, it is so clouded and muddied the water that it makes the majority of people, even though they may believe in the existence of UFOs and extraterrestrials, it makes the majority of people very skeptical. And it kind of holds them at bay. And then I think it also forces a lot of the officials, I want to say government folks and whatnot, it kind of forces them into a holding pattern because the minute they get on the bandwagon, you know, they're going to be labeled a nutcase. And I guess that's the whole thing. If there was just some way we could, you know, eliminate so many of these nuts and crazy people and just get down to the hardcore evidence, I think there's a lot of hardcore evidence there. I mean, there's overwhelming hardcore evidence, but it's difficult to get to it and get your hands on it, like you were saying.
Yeah, it is. Even my experiences, you know, I spent, gosh, you know, back in 1987, you know, I had an experience that just shattered my, you know, my worldview. And it took me a long time to just try and figure out what I was going to do with the experience. And the reason why I decided to write the book, for example, was really not to write a book about me and my experience, but to write a book about all of us and what is actually happening in the phenomena and the way I understand it today. And even then, I was, you know, nervous and frankly scared about why I was going to do this and what that would mean for my reputation and my career. And I talked to my wife at length about it. And ultimately, I came down to the conclusion that, you know, if someone with a rational mind doesn't step forward and say, look, you know, here's what I understand is happening. This is what happened to me. I know it sounds a little bit crazy, but I'm not crazy. Yet, I think there's something that we can learn from these experiences, and we just have to bring a much more pragmatic approach to this very difficult subject. I'm scared about, you know, being labeled at times a crazy, but then on the other hand, you know, as a gentleman pointed out to me, he says, Jim, he says, you know, media needs to talk to people. And in the absence of talking to a rational person, they'll talk to anybody. So I thought, he says, in other words, he was always telling me, he says, Jim, you know, you have to stick your neck out, you know, no matter what's going to come out of it. And some people are going to look at you and say, well, you know, you're crazy. That's okay. I think I can certainly accept that now, because what I understand about what's happening with the phenomenon is so incredible for not just, you know, our lives currently, but for the future of humanity. I think it's just something that, with all its challenges, we still really need to make a huge effort to understand what's happening.
Well, I guess the thing about folks having experiences. You're listening to Radio Disclosure, and we'll be right back with our guest, Jim Maroney, the author of The Extraterrestrial Answer Book, right after this. As a shortwave radio listener, you know there's no such thing as a good indoor antenna. If you're looking for an antenna that allows you to pull in those distant signals and also gets rid of the atmospheric noise, you need a good outdoor antenna. But in a lot of cases, folks can't have an outdoor antenna. Now you can. Transworld Antennas is the name of the company. The website is transworldantennas.com. Go to their site and check out the TW2010 or the 4040 or the 8080 for that matter. These are all antennas that will increase the sensitivity of your shortwave radio. It gets the antenna that receives outside of the indoor environment, away from electrical noise, the pops and cracks and things that go on inside a building, and they hide. The TW2010 just literally disappears wherever you put it. Folks don't see it. And it's a good antenna for your receiver. It's a good match for any shortwave radio. If you're having difficulty pulling in those distance signals, or if you're looking for a portable antenna that you can take with you wherever you go, you want it to be low profile, you want it to be stealth, where you can set it up and nobody really knows it's an antenna, this is the antenna for you. Go to the website, transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com. And get a TW2010, a 4040, or an 8080, whichever model best suits your receiving needs. You'll be glad you did. Transworldantennas.com. Are you needing a place to put up a website? Have you looked around? You want to do something that's easy, that's simple, and very, very inexpensive, but yet looks professional? Are you having troubles with your computer? Do you need some tech support help? Are you tired of being connected to India every time you pick up the telephone to get some help on a machine or on a website? The people to call is tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. T-U-X, like tuxedo, dash support, the word support, dot com. These are the people to call. They can get you going. It won't cost you an arm and a leg. You can afford to work with these folks. They're professionals. They answer in plain English, and they can help you do things from a very, very basic, simple standpoint. If you have something that you want to do that's a complex project, well, they can handle that as well. But if you're like I am, when you're trying to put something up on the web or you need help with a computer, you really want somebody that speaks English. And you want it to be simple, and you don't want to have to pay an arm and a leg for it. And you want to deal with some good folks. Go to their website, tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. If you're the decision maker for any form of outdoor lighting, you're going to want to listen to this. The Light Pack Systems induction lights, manufactured in the USA by a severely disabled workforce, uses a unique physical principle of light generation. This lamp system is therefore classified in a new family of sources, the Light Pack Induction Lamp Systems. Light Pack Induction Lighting is a breakthrough for professional, general, and special lighting applications. Not only because of its high luminescence and efficiency, but especially because of its unprecedented lifetime. System lifetime is rated at 100,000 hours, or about 20 years, based on 5,000 burning hours per year. With a failure rate of less than 10%. With this unmatched durability, LightPack offers substantial savings in direct maintenance costs as well as indirect costs. Induction lighting is relatively new in the United States, but it's proven technology developed in Europe over 20 years ago. Therefore, claims of durability is based on real-world empirical data as opposed to estimated design life provided by competitive lighting technologies such as LED. LightPack Systems was founded on the principles of green solutions for modern lighting through strong partnerships with the U.S. military, the University of Central Florida, and several national energy service companies. LightPack offers lighting solutions that provide a better quality of light with a 66% energy savings, also lasting up to 5 times longer than standard lighting options. LightPack's quality shines through with their standard 10-year warranty on all products. Call today for your free demonstration. Go to their website, lightpacksystems.com. That's lightpacksystems.com, spelled LitePackSystems, lightpacksystems.com. Something new at Radio Disclosure. We have been collecting items of interest, something that you might want. And once a month, we are going to have a drawing and give away some of these items of interest. Now, if you'd like to get your name in the hat, write us an email. Go to radiodisclosure.com. That's radiodisclosure.com. Shoot us an email and tell us a little bit about yourself, and tell us that you're interested in the items of interest. We're going to do a drawing once a month, and several people that listen to Radio Disclosure are going to get something really cool. We look forward to hearing from you. Go to our website, radiodisclosure.com, and send us an email. And keep listening and tell your friends about Radio Disclosure. You're listening to Radio Disclosure. And now back to our guest, Jim Maroney, the author of The Extraterrestrial Answer Book. When I was very young, I had a chance to meet George Adamski. I don't know if you're familiar with him at all.
But no, not really.
Okay, George had some of the most outstanding UFO photos that you could possibly want to see. And people said that the one photograph that's been so widely circulated, they called it a chicken brooder. They called it all kinds of different things. And it remains to be seen, I guess, not positive, absolute proof and evidence, but so much of his story adds up. And even talking with folks like Linda Moulton Howe, who says, I believe something happened to Adamski. I met him as a very young kid. I was in the eighth grade. I believe George Adamski had an experience. Unfortunately, right. It was at a time when it wasn't really fashionable, you know, to have had an experience with an ET. And George, I think he embellished a lot on his stories. And I think he wanted to get information out to the public and whatnot. But he embellished a lot because I almost think he had to. I mean, I really believe he almost had to in order to, you know, attract a crowd and to get enough ears to listen to make it worthwhile trying to do. I think he had to. But then, once again, that becomes a very unfortunate thing because then, you know, people will pick up on anything that someone embellishes on and say, well, let's just discount the entire story, you know. And I can't think of any walk of life where people have any sort of an unusual experience. And I'm even talking, you know, I mean, the famous old story of how big was the fish, you know. People go out on fishing expeditions and they come back, and when they get done telling the story, the fish is three times larger than it really was in reality. I think this holds true in almost every walk of life. So in the UFO arena, it's not going to be any different. And yet folks have tried to crucify that man based on the fact that he embellished on some of his story. But tell us a little bit. I'm a little curious. You've written this book. What areas are you trying to cover in the book? What does the book cover in terms of subject and chapters and whatnot?
Well, really what the book covers is my personal experience back in 1987 and how that changed my life. And I had an encounter experience. And what I did from that point in time is spend, you know, years essentially researching the subject itself and trying to evaluate how it's changing and how our society is addressing it and those types of things. I mean, there was a lot of times, for example, where people were saying, oh, you know what, there's nothing to this UFO stuff. It's just going to go away. And I mean, they've been saying that for years, and it's just not going away because there's actually a substance to actually the phenomenon itself. And ultimately, trying to understand what's really going on, what is actually happening, and what kind of predictions we can actually make based on the evidence that we have. And I mean, I'm referring to the best evidence that we have in this subject. And obviously, I'm skewing this because of my personal experiences. I mean, I'm quite cognizant of the fact that my personal experiences influence to a great extent what my interpretations are around this particular subject. So when I look back in 1987, I mean, what I had is actually a direct encounter, or we'll call it an abduction experience, with beings that I never even could have dreamed of existing. I thought, back in 1987, I mean, I thought maybe a little bit about UFOs. I just thought, well, okay, they're probably pretty much like us, and, you know, maybe they don't want anything to do with human beings, but I really did believe at that time that there was something to the whole UFO phenomenon, but I didn't think much more than that. So the experience that I had in 1987, it was so dramatic that it really knocked me off my feet. And I was really fortunate that I had an opportunity to kind of take a number of years to kind of figure out what's really going on. And what I understand it to be today, and I can basically summarize this, and that is, it's no longer a question of when humanity will contact and interact with extraterrestrials, but rather the much more difficult question of how they have decided to interact with us. And, you know, Stephen Hawking was on the show just, on programs just, last week or two, and stating about contact with extraterrestrials and what that might be like. But really what we're dealing with right now is that the extraterrestrials have already been aware of us and been aware of us for some time, and they've chosen a mode of interaction with us. And it seems that their desire is to have intimate contact with individuals rather than, addressing any particular government or any form of government that currently exists. They're certainly attracted to individuals for particular reasons we don't fully understand. I don't fully understand yet. But that seems to be their primary desire or mode of contact at this point in time, and that is to search out individuals, to find individuals, to evaluate individuals, and then determine what kind of a relationship is going to unfold. So that's maybe the other component to the book, is that this is really a new kind of relationship, or an unfolding kind of relationship, something that we've never experienced before and something that we're going to have to experience a lot more in the future. And it's all tied into the coming changes that's going to happen in our world over the next 10, 20 years, and 30 years. So we're not talking about something that's going to happen in 100 years. We're actually looking at something that's very likely going to happen within the next 20 years.
Well,
that's something that we should really do to prepare for.
That's really weird, because when I was a kid, there was a lady that lived not too far from me who was an Adamski follower, but she was kind of, I guess, in a class of her own. I think her name was like Laura Markser. At one point, she did a television show on Channel 4 television in Detroit for kids, and I think she used the name Midge. And there may be some folks that remember her or know about her, but her writing book, her pen name was Laura Mundo. And I remember her. I used to think she was just babbling, but she kept talking about atomic vibrations and how the vibrations and vibratory states and things are going to change, and that right now that vibrations are way, way too high, and it causes all this consternation inside of society and humanity and all that kind of stuff. And she had this whole thing all mapped out. But it's kind of funny, because as I hear people talk about the approaching, 2012 thing, and I hear people talking about changes that are coming up, it's almost like she's being parroted, and the lady passed away years ago, and I don't think anyone ever heard of her. She was relatively obscure, but it is kind of funny. Well, tell us a bit about, tell me, if you would, get into some detail about the experience that you had, because I think folks, that's something folks are want to hear, and I believe there's a lot of folks that have had similar experiences, I'm sure, and it doesn't fall on deaf ears. There's people that want to hear someone else say, "Hey, look, this happened to me too. I had this happen."
Sure.
And I've had conversations with so many people that have had encounters that are just unexplainable. That I think it's important we talk about this stuff. So talk about your situation, your experience that you had. Was in 1987.
Okay, well, I'll put it in the context. I'll start with the context of how this really unfolded, and that is that these beings were aware of me for years and years, and I never knew they even existed. They have the ability to interact with us, and us have no memory of actually, the experience itself. But they decided at some point they were going to let me know that they existed, and they were also going to let me know what they were doing. And that decision they made was in 1987. And I, at the time, was driving from a little place in Western Canada to Central Canada. And I'd driven, about 11 hours. And I pulled into a truck stop. And I had this really overwhelming feeling of dread. And like something was going to happen. And I wasn't sure what it was. And I was very, very uneasy. And I was so uneasy, I said, I'm just going to, I needed to be near people. That was my feeling. So I pull into this truck stop. People could see me. I made sure that, I was around people. I thought, okay, this is nice and safe, but I have to get some sleep. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'm just dying, You know how it is when you're driving. You're just ready to nod off.
Oh, yeah.
And I managed to get myself to this truck stop. I pull in. I was driving a 1987 Honda Civic at the time. So, here I am trying to sleep in a 1987 Honda Civic in a truck stop. Not the best decision that I've ever made in my life, but I move over to the passenger seat. I get the pedals out of the way. I get the steering wheel out of the way. I put the seat back, and I try to get some sleep. And the darn, trucks are pulling in and out every, half hour. And I could never really get to sleep. And they would wake me up because of the vibrations or the lights that would shine into my car. And suddenly this truck's coming really close because the lights are just blasting into my car. I'm thinking, what in the world? This guy's getting too close. And all of a sudden, I noticed that the lights were moving over top of the car. And they were brilliant. They were different colors. And I had a small sunroof, so I knew that the lights were moving over top of the car. And my eyes were still closed. And I didn't want to open them because it's like opening your eyes into a really strong light. It's going to be painful. So I just kind of kept my eyes closed, and I could still see the color through my eyelids. I mean, that's how brilliant it was. And then all of a sudden, this incredible paralysis came over me, and I could feel myself moving through the car. And the next, I had these disjointed memories of what had actually happened. But I had to go a couple of months later, and I had the courage to go through hypnosis, and I recounted exactly what had happened. And so here's at least components to what happened. I find myself standing beside my car in an atrium kind of room. The room was about 25 feet high. The steps themselves were no more than 3 or 4 inches high. Well, maybe I'm going to say 4 inches high. And I'm standing in front of four distinctly non-human beings. They had no hair. It's typically like large heads. They were wearing uniforms of some sort, beige kind of uniforms, and they had eyes that were about four times larger than human eyes, and they had pupils. So they weren't black eyes or anything like that some people report. These had blue pupils to them. And there are four of them just standing there staring at me. And I was mad. It actually hurt, this whole moving the car and me into this particular atrium, and it's actually fairly painful. So I'm not sure what technology they were using in the process that they used to be able to do that.
You're listening to Radio Disclosure, and we'll be right back with our guest, Jim Maroney, the author of The Extraterrestrial Answer Book, right after this. In this day and time, what we don't have much of is time. And if you enjoy operating and you just don't get a chance to, you need to take a look at the Trans World Antennas, TW2010, and all the models that operate the different bands. Go to YouTube and put in Trans World Antennas and see how simple this thing is to set up. I mean, it is easy. It goes together fast. And of course, that gives you more time to operate. You're not fussing around with an antenna. In an emergency situation, it is absolutely necessary. You need to have one of these, if not for yourself, for your club, or whoever it is that may get called out on a scene where you've got to operate and you've got to be able to set up quickly and efficiently. Go to their website, and that's transworldantennas.com. Transworldantennas.com. There's a link up there to YouTube, and you can see how quickly this antenna sets up, how easy it is to operate. Transworldantennas.com. Are you needing a place to put up a website? Have you looked around? Do you want to do something that's easy, that's simple, and very, very inexpensive, but yet looks professional? Are you having troubles with your computer? Do you need some tech support help? Are you tired of being connected to India every time you pick up the telephone to get some help on a machine or on a website? The people to call is tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. T-U-X, like tuxedo, dash support, the word support, .com. These are the people to call. They can get you going. It won't cost you an arm and a leg. You can afford to work with these folks. They're professionals. They answer in plain English, and they can help you do things from a very, very basic, simple standpoint. If you have something that you want to do that's a complex project, well, they can handle that as well. But if you're like I am, when you're trying to put something up on the web or you need help with a computer, you really want somebody that speaks English. And you want it to be simple, and you don't want to have to pay an arm and a leg for it. And you want to deal with some good folks. Go to their website, tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. If you're the decision maker for any form of outdoor lighting, you're going to want to listen to this. The Light Pack Systems induction lights, manufactured in the USA by a severely disabled workforce, uses a unique physical principle of light generation. This lamp system is therefore classified in a new family of sources, the Light Pack induction lamp systems. Light Pack induction lighting is a breakthrough for professional, general, and special lighting applications, not only because of its high luminescence and efficiency, but especially because of its unprecedented lifetime. System lifetime is rated at 100,000 hours, or about 20 years, based on 5,000 burning hours per year. With a failure rate of less than 10%, with this unmatched durability, LightPack offers substantial savings in direct maintenance costs as well as indirect costs. Induction lighting is relatively new in the United States, but it's proven technology developed in Europe over 20 years ago. Therefore, claims of durability is based on real-world empirical data, as opposed to estimated design life provided by competitive lighting technologies such as LED. LightPack Systems was founded on the principles of green solutions for modern lighting through strong partnerships with the U.S. military, the University of Central Florida, and several national energy service companies. LightPack offers lighting solutions that provide a better quality of light with a 66% energy savings, also lasting up to 5 times longer than standard lighting options. LightPack's quality shines through with their standard 10-year warranty on all products. Call today for your free demonstration. Go to their website, lightpacksystems.com. That's lightpacksystems.com, spelled LitePackSystems. lightpacksystems.com. Something new at Radio Disclosure. We have been collecting items of interest, something that you might want. And once a month, we are going to have a drawing and give away some of these items of interest. Now, if you'd like to get your name in the hat, write us an email. Go to radiodisclosure.com. That's radiodisclosure.com. Shoot us an email and tell us a little bit about yourself, and tell us that you're interested in the items of interest. We're going to do a drawing once a month, and several people that listen to Radio Disclosure are going to get something really cool. We look forward to hearing from you. Go to our website, radiodisclosure.com, and send us an email. And keep listening and tell your friends about Radio Disclosure. You're listening to Radio Disclosure. And now back to our guest, Jim Maroney, the author of The Extraterrestrial Answer Book.
But they actually spoke English as well, so... Here I was yelling and starting to scream at them and swear at them. I've been quite indignant, saying that, you don't have the right to do this. What do you guys think you're doing? Leave me alone. Like, what are you doing? And one of them stepped forward and immediately calmed me down. It was as if you are in, if you've ever had an opportunity to go see somebody who's taking people through hypnosis, and best describe it is that I was under some kind of control, like not 100% control, but they would give me a suggestion and I would follow it without question. It just seemed like this was the natural thing to do. And they were able to just, calm me down very, very quickly. And then essentially, these guys were actually, I'll call them the good guys. I'm not sure how other people view extraterrestrials. But I've seen, some people think that they're bad and other people think they're good. My experience has definitely been that they're good. But the experience itself is pretty hard, because what they're doing is that this is really kind of like an intervention. And they were very firm with me. They basically said, Jim, you know, here, you have to come here. We have some medical things we have to do for you or do on you. And the medical procedures were pretty, you know, intrusive. They were pretty difficult. So I was scared through the whole process. In some parts, you know, I was crying. I was really, really distressed. But at the end of the experience, I found out that, you know, there was this being that came up to me, and she was the same as all the others. She was about, I'd say, 5'2", maybe 5'3", and she had feminine qualities about her, but she didn't have any feminine attributes to her. And she stepped forward to me, and she asked me, you know, why are you angry? We don't understand your anger. And I thought about it for a minute, and the whole time in this experience, I was really trying to communicate with him, and I felt that the best way to communicate with him was to show I'm willing to cooperate with him. And you know, it's difficult, but when you realize you're by yourself, you have to really fall back on what you think is going to get you out of these situations alive. And I thought that, look, if I cooperate with them and show them I'm not here to hurt them, I can find out what they're trying to do. And maybe we can develop some kind of friendship, and they'll let me go. I didn't even know at this point in time that I'd ever, you know, get back home. It was a pretty stressful experience. And this being steps forward and says, you know, I don't understand your anger. We don't understand your anger. And I started thinking about it. I said, oh, yeah, when they got me on the ship the first time, I was swearing at them and yelling at them. And I said, well, I wanted to say, look, I'm sorry. You know, I just wasn't expecting it to hurt is really what I wanted to say. But all I got out was, I'm sorry. And then, the tears just welled up, and I started bawling like a baby, just releasing all the stress of the encounter experience and what I had been experiencing up to that point. And, you know, she hugged me, and I hugged her back, and she just, you know, whispered to me. She says, it's okay to cry. The strong ones cry. And that's a really, I think, signifies the entire experience itself in that way. It's as if they were testing me to try and figure out who I am, to try and understand, you know, who Jim Maroney really is. You know, what makes up Jim Maroney? What kind of a person Jim Maroney is? And it was kind of a test in some ways. And the other part of it, this test was rolled up into this actual experience where they had to do these medical procedures. And it appears that these medical procedures are going to be something that we're going to be more aware of as to why they're doing them. But, you know, it's not just an evaluation. They're trying to change something. I just don't know exactly at this point in time what they're trying to change. I don't think anybody does.
Well, see, I guess it's a good thing they don't abduct a lot of radio engineers, because we'd have a lot of questions. We'd be like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? What is this all about? I don't think that, I don't know. I mean, I can understand it, but boy, you talk about you were angry. I think I would have been saying, what was this all about? Do you realize how much this hurt? You know, why were you doing this? You know, I don't know that I could accept that if it were me in that situation. I think I'd be biting back pretty hard, at least verbally. Because it doesn't, I mean, I really think if somebody's going to take you from your environment and put you through excruciating pain, they owe you an explanation.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think that would be a universal law, you know, not, you know, obviously there's governments on earth that violate human rights and do things like this and never say I'm sorry or explain anything. But I guess from our standpoint, where we come from, where we live, you know, other than if you are a rural county Tennessee sheriff, you have to go by the rules, you know. And in our area here, we're blessed with those that don't follow any rules at all. They kind of make them up as they go. So I don't know. Well, all right. What do you think? What came out of all of this in terms of, in your mind, do you think you've been able to decipher any purpose at all, or are you still left kind of hanging, not really understanding why? I mean, you obviously know there's a purpose, but maybe not having a clue as to what it is.
Well, yeah, I have a better idea of what's happening. It could be best described. This whole relationship that's unfolding is unfolding thousands of years before it should have, you know. unfolded. In other words, it's happening thousands of years before it should happen. And it's also happening in a way that could be best described as an intervention. Now, what we're dealing with here is not contact, per se. It's not about, hi, how are you? You know, I'm from planet X. You know, you just want to introduce yourself. That's not what's happening here. What we're really dealing with is an intervention into human evolution. And their desire, what they've determined for themselves right now, is that the best way to save humanity is, first of all, to conduct this type of intervention which involves individuals in which they have to complete or conduct, which they have to actually perform these medical procedures. And so there's something they want to change in us. I think it has to do something with spiritual development. I think it's related to that, because when you look at all of humanity at present, the biggest problems that we currently face appears to be our lack of spiritual development. In other words, we have an imbalance. Our technological development has far exceeded our spiritual development. And by that I mean, you know, we have the potential to kill ourselves and to kill others, but we don't really have, at least at this point in time, the ability to kind of find a peaceful way to live with each other in the world. And their concern is, and they have a real perception about the future for humanity. And I could best describe it when someone was asking me this question, says, Jim, what are they really like? And I said, well, maybe I could best describe it this way. Think of your most gifted psychic in the world, if you believe in psychic. Think of your most gifted psychic, and then multiply that 1,000 times. I said, that's kind of what we're dealing with here, because we're dealing with a different consciousness. You know, they see the universe very differently than the way we see it. And they see themselves as coming from the universe. And when you have six, 7 billion people on this planet, and we're in distress, you know, when we're heading to a cataclysm of some sort, it's going to garner the attention of the universe in some way. And this is apparently what's happened. And these beings have seen this, and they're here responding to the crisis that's going to be coming. And so what we're dealing with then is really a sense of this intervention, trying to figure out, okay, exactly how this is going to be unfolding and what the next step's going to be. But it certainly seems that the next major steps are going to happen over the next 5 to 10 years. And this new relationship is going to be something that's never happened before in human history. I really think of it as a challenge. Like you said, you know, it's difficult because we have our own, and I do as well, you know, I have my own belief systems, and many of them have been shattered and challenged and have had to rearrange them. And I'm thinking that at this point in time, you know, our best foot forward would be the best step that we need to take. In other words, we should try and understand more about what's actually happening, and we should be doing something to help those individuals who are struggling to trying to come to terms with this new relationship, so that all of us can have a better understanding of how to respond to these beings and what kind of a relationship is going to unfold. I had a question once about somebody said, Jim, do you think we're just going to be able to, like, you know, walk up to them and shake their hands? I wish that would be the case, but from my experiences, boy, I'll tell you, it's so difficult being with them. I'm not sure that is going to happen in my lifetime. I wish it would, but I just don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime. It's just that difficult of an experience with them. I think they're very, very careful about who they contact, because, you know, they don't want to really hurt people necessarily. They're here really to help us. And the other component to that is that just because someone hurts you doesn't mean they're a bad person. I mean, anytime you go to the dentist, the dentist hurts you. You know, if I was to use that adage, then all dentists would be bad.
Well, they are.
You know, or all doctors. When I'm sitting in the chair, they are. So I think there's a different way we have to look at what's actually happening in this phenomenon, and a different way to approach it and try and understand it. It's going to be difficult. There's certainly, and I've certainly had my challenges with it as well. But this overwhelming sense of love and compassion that I felt from this being was something I've never felt in my entire life from any human being. It was so, so powerful.
Okay, you're listening to Radio Disclosure, and we'll be right back with our guest, Jim Maroney, the author of The Extraterrestrial Answer Book, right after this. It operates 20 through 10 meters. its stealth. It will keep up with any three-element beam and any vertical that you have on your property. But if you can't have a three-element beam or a vertical on your property, you can still have a TW2010. It is stealth. It disappears. We tried to take pictures of it, and we had to move the thing around because it hides so well. There is no compromise in performance with this antenna, and it's portable. You can take it with you on vacation. It's quite unique. They make several flavors of this antenna, however. If you want to operate 80, 40, 60, 30-meter band, it's all there. Go to their website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com, and check out the special pricing right now.
The Light Pack Systems induction lights, manufactured in the USA by a severely disabled workforce, uses a unique physical principle of light generation.
Light Pack induction lighting is a breakthrough for professional, general, and special lighting applications.
System lifetime is rated at 100,000 hours, or about 20 years, based on 5,000 burning hours per year, with a failure rate of less than 10%.
LightPack offers substantial savings in direct maintenance costs as well as indirect costs.
LightPack offers lighting solutions that provide a better quality of light with a 66% energy savings, also lasting up to 5 times longer than standard lighting options. LightPack's quality shines through with their standard 10-year warranty on all products. Call today for your free demonstration. Go to their website, lightpacksystems.com. That's lightpacksystems.com, spelled LitePackSystems, lightpacksystems.com.
Since the beginning of time and across the history of radio broadcasting, there's only one radio station that has ever earned a full-length documentary dedicated totally and completely to its rise to a pinnacle never before achieved by any radio station, and its fall. This is a story of what happened when the most legendary programming genius of all time takes the reins of an obscure Canadian radio station in the small city of Windsor, Canada, and creates a radio legend that rocked the Motor City, the USA, and half a continent.
Well, that does it for Big Tom Rivers, 1971, and Hank O'Neill starts a brand new year next at CKLW. For the last time this year, I will say to you, rock on, mother!
Ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
CKLW.
2020 news guys, they were disc jockeys without music. Bum, bum, bum. And everybody knew that something was going to happen. You knew something was going to happen.
Motor City Mayor Roman Gribbs has a mad on for an unidentified rapist, a butcher knife-wielding pervert cornered a secretary in the elevator at Detroit City County Building and rode her to a vacant seventh floor and proceeded to sexually assault her. Guards are now being considered for future surveillance of the crime-stained seventh floor. Lee Marshall, 2020 News.
Now, Markham Street Productions takes you there as you relive the rise and fall of
the big HCKLW, the Motor City.
You can now own your own copy of this new DVD documentary, Radio Revolution, the rise and fall of the Big 8 from Markham Street Productions. The special edition DVD of this award-winning feature-length documentary includes extra scenes, outtakes, photos, and special features. Radio Revolution, the rise and fall of the Big 8, is now available for only $29.95 plus shipping. Go to RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com. Order now while supply lasts. RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com.
And the hits just keep on coming.
CKLW. The Motor City.
Something new at Radio Disclosure. We have been collecting items of interest, something that you might want. And once a month, we are going to have a drawing, and give away some of these items of interest. Now, if you'd like to get your name in the hat, write us an email. Go to radiodisclosure.com. That's radiodisclosure.com. Shoot us an email and tell us a little bit about yourself, and tell us that you're interested in the items of interest. We're going to do a drawing once a month, and several people that listen to Radio Disclosure are going to get something really cool. We look forward to hearing from you. Go to our website, radiodisclosure.com, and send us an email. And keep listening and tell your friends about Radio Disclosure. You're listening to Radio Disclosure. And now back to our guest, Jim Maroney, the author of The Extraterrestrial Answer Book. You've been through that experience, but I guess the question I have is, how do we know for sure that they are not looking at the human race and saying, hey, look, these guys are making way too much progress, and at this point they pose a threat. We're going to have to take them back a few notches here so that they don't progress too quickly. How do we know that's not what's going on?
Well, we don't. Specifically, we don't know that's going on. But I could say from a reasonable, rational point of view, from my mind, I said, don't worry about taking us back a few steps. We're going to do that to ourselves anyway. They just have to sit back and watch. We have a lot of challenges coming up over the next few years, with struggles of countries and nuclear proliferation and all those other types of things. We've got a lot of big, big issues that are sitting on our plates that we're going to have to deal with. I don't believe that war is going to continue in the same fashion that we see it today in the next 50 years. I think we're going to have to come to a position in time that we're going to have to find a way to live in peace with each other. But I just don't know how that's going to happen, to be honest with you. It seems that, and I'm going to be a little bit more of a, I'm maybe a pessimist here, but it seems that if you have a major war, it'll probably force humanity to, deal with the issues that we have not been able to deal with up to this point in time. And we're just going to realize that, there has to be a better way of managing the world and managing our differences than resorting to violence.
I guess the thing of it is back some years ago, we heard, the big message from outer space was lay down your nuclear weapons before you destroy the universe, that message is pretty well near gone by the wayside. We don't hear that too much. It's almost like ET really doesn't care about our nuclear warheads. So now the focus is on some sort of a horrible thing that's going to happen that hangs over our heads, and that they're here to make course corrections or whatever. But we have to go all the way back to the whole idea of possible genetic engineering and how much interference has there been, or not necessarily interference as much as how much interfacing with the human race have they had over thousands of years. That's another question that's brought up. Then, of course, you hear some of the great minds like Stephen Hawking says, I just wouldn't mess with them. I really wouldn't be attracting their attention. That's kind of like trying to find the bully on the playground, at recess. And I you've got all this conflicting stuff, but yet you hear stories like yourself where you say you felt overwhelming love from this person. We have other folks that go through abductions that say that they were heartless, they were cruel, they were mean, and I don't ever want to have to go through that again. So, there's all these conflicting things, and then we hear that there's good ETs and there's bad ETs, so I don't know.
Where do you actually, where do you get, where do you come up with a fundamental understanding of what's actually happening? I really believe that, my experience obviously has merit to it, but what other people are experiencing, I have to weigh that as well and consider, the pros and cons about what they're actually suggesting or what they're stating as experiences. I'm like everybody else. Despite the fact that I've had these encounter experiences, I'm like anybody else. When someone comes to me and says, I've had an alien abduction experience, the first thing I think about is, I doubt it. I mean, that's the first thing that comes to my mind.
Even after you've been through an abduction experience, the first time someone comes to you and says that that's what they've been through, you are immediately skeptical.
Absolutely. That's just my nature, I suppose. But, you know, I've heard stories from people that I just, you know, walked away and said, you know what, that just doesn't ring true to me at all. That doesn't seem, I don't think that person's working on a full deck. You know, I think they're crazy.
Well, that's what we were talking about originally when we first started talking. I said it's unfortunate that we have that kind of activity inside the UFO arena, so to speak, so because it makes it so much more difficult to decipher what the truth is about things. But let me ask you this. I mean, sure. There's several roads I'd like to go down. Let me ask you, before this happened to you, what was your religious background?
I was Roman Catholic. I was brought up in a fairly strict Catholic background.
Okay, now let me ask you this. After this happened, what went on inside your head, and what kind of a sorting process did you go through?
Well, you know, I really began to realize that many of my preconceived ideas were wrong. You know, much of what I was taught in school was wrong. So I struggled with trying to find a new understanding of the universe and the world around me. And what I came to the conclusion was is that the Creator, you know, God, if you want to name, exists within all living things. It exists within each of us and all living things. All life is essentially in some way related to the Creator. And these beings are no different than that. These beings are obviously related to the Creator. And they have a much more intimate relationship, I think, or an intimate understanding of the Creator and the universe. And the Creator, I mean, the Creator is essentially love and an unconditional love. And yet, how do I reconcile all of these completely new belief systems with my traditional belief systems? I think that, you know, religions and world religions and Catholicism and Judaism and Muslims, and they all have their purpose. And that is to try and promote spiritual development, you know, for human beings. So when we come into this life, we have an opportunity to experience it through those types of religions. And I think in some cases, some religions have done absolutely wonderful things. And yet we still have people within these religious groups that, you know, go down a different path and promote violence and promote other things and hatred and separation. And I think that's wrong. I think that's one of the fundamental things that might be wrong with major religions, is any religion that promotes a separation between others and that, you know, we're better than other people and we're better than those, I think has to be reconsidered, I think, in the next 100 years. I just don't think there's going to be a place for any religions that have those types of belief systems in place. You know, I think there's going to be a much more universal kind of belief systems. And I still think that, you know, there's going to be places for the major religions in the future. I'm just not sure how they're going to, you know, look in the next 50 or 60 or 100 years, you know, particularly when we work towards more of a peaceful kind of
Well, when you were speaking about religions that promote violence, one of the things that comes to mind is the recent incident where Franklin Graham, the son of Dr. Billy Graham, was barred from attending a prayer breakfast because he made some statements about the Muslim religion. And that kind of troubles me, only because after 9/11, and, you know, of course, we want to know how all this figures into E.T., but after 9/11, I did not hear one single member of the Muslim religion get on national television and say, look, this group of people are a violent group of people that we don't claim. They're not part of us. We do not advocate violence. We do not advocate what these people have done. They are not, to quote off of Star Trek, they are not of the body. They are not of the body. You know, they are non sequitur. You know, nobody denounced them. Matter of fact, it seems like all they did was skirt the issue. It was like they just were somehow programmed, like some sort of robotic device, to where they could not reject the behavior of those people who flew those airplanes into those buildings. And that scares me. I'm thinking there's something really wrong with that. Because when this Jim Jones guy down in Guyana had everybody drink the Kool-Aid, I don't think there was anybody, Protestant, Catholic, or otherwise, that didn't say, that man was crazy. He was nuts. You know, what do we do about preventing people from being duped into stuff like this in the future? But the Muslims got on television and talked all the way around the subject. I mean, they were the best politicians I've ever heard. And to this day, until somebody stands up and says, look, the guys that flew the airplanes into the buildings were not part of our group. We don't claim them. Then I really don't want to hear any more about the Muslim religion, period. I mean, I think any religion that promotes violence and the destruction of, and of course now, you know, someone will come back to me and say, well, you know what? Christianity has claimed more lives through the centuries than any other religion on the earth, you know. But I would like to think that at this point we've advanced a bit beyond that. We're not holding massive worldwide crusades and slaughtering millions of people in the name of our religion. At least I hope we're not anywhere, you know. But that's something that really bothers me. And I wonder, I just wonder how the ET presence is going to change the concepts of a lot of religions in terms of how they look at, the dogmatic approach to hating another person of another faith. I guess that's about the best way. I'm wondering if the ET presence is not going to maybe accomplish a little bit of that. What do you think?
I think they're going to, and because that's one of the things that they've obviously selected is that they want to actually work individually with individuals. They want, and they're searching for an intimate relationship with us. And by that, I mean just with individuals and, of course, with all of humanity. I think that's ultimately where they want to go. And when they do that, they definitely want us to be part of a greater universe. They want us to be part of a greater neighborhood of other beings that are ultimately peaceful, you know, and they understand essentially the problems with violence. So all of our religions, that any religion that promotes violence, that promotes this confrontation and stuff, to an end, to a means, there's just got to be no place for them in the future. There's no, you know, I mean, you can say, well, how long will that take? Well, okay, if 20 or 30 years is too soon, think of 1,000 years. I mean, religions either are going to have to evolve to adopt peaceful aspects, to which much of these religions actually started off that way. It was, you know, a lot of the religions started off with saying, hey, you know what, fundamentally, here's the basis for the religion, and that is peace and love and, you know, some major components to that, and forgiveness and compassion. Those were the major components of all religions. And it just gets turned and twisted at times, you know, to reflect specific goals and objectives of other people. So I think that the world would be in a lot better place if individually we just followed what we knew as individuals was the right thing and didn't get so caught up in what the group was doing. You know, the group will follow good leaders. If you do what you know is right, if you stick to the course, then things are going to be just fine. I mean, things might be tough, it might be a little bit tougher, but I think ultimately that's the best way for, you know, humanity to get out of the troubles it's currently in, and maybe to change some of the world religions that are currently struggling with this whole idea of violence.
You're listening to Radio Disclosure, and we'll be right back with our guest, Jim Maroney, the author of The Extraterrestrial Answer Book, right after this. Week after week, you hear us talk about trans world antennas, and you hear us talk about the TW2010, the 4040, the Backpacker, and all these different antennas. Of course, the TW2010 Adventurer came first. Folks were amazed at its performance. Then they introduced the Backpacker, and now the 4040. Go to EHAM and read the reviews on the TW2010. Just go to EHAM and read those reviews. Now, you can do that by going to transworldantennas.com. Just go to transworldantennas.com. Transworld Antennas, one word. Go to transworldantennas.com. There's a link on that page that'll take you right straight to the EHAM reviews. Or you can just go to EHAM yourself. And if you're a ham, you know how to get to EHAM on the internet. Just Google it. You'll get there. And read the reviews. see what other amateur radio operators are saying about this antenna. Thank you.
If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping, and makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
If you're the decision maker for any form of outdoor lighting, you're going to want to listen to this. The Light Pack Systems induction lights, manufactured in the USA by a severely disabled workforce, uses a unique physical principle of light generation. This lamp system is therefore classified in a new family of sources, the Light Pack Induction Lamp Systems. Light Pack Induction Lighting is a breakthrough for professional, general, and special lighting applications. Not only because of its high luminescence and efficiency, but especially because of its unprecedented lifetime. System lifetime is rated at 100,000 hours, or about 20 years, based on 5,000 burning hours per year. With a failure rate of less than 10%. With this unmatched durability, LightPack offers substantial savings in direct maintenance costs as well as indirect costs. Induction lighting is relatively new in the United States, but it's proven technology developed in Europe over 20 years ago. Therefore, claims of durability is based on real-world empirical data, as opposed to estimated design life provided by competitive lighting technologies such as LED. LightPack Systems was founded on the principles of green solutions for modern lighting through strong partnerships with the U.S. military, the University of Central Florida, and several national energy service companies. LightPack offers lighting solutions that provide a better quality of light with a 66% energy savings, also lasting up to 5 times longer than standard lighting options. LightPack's quality shines through with their standard 10-year warranty on all products. Call today for your free demonstration. Go to their website, lightpacksystems.com. That's lightpacksystems.com, spelled LitePackSystems. Lightpacksystems.com.
Are you needing a place to put up a website? Have you looked around? You want to do something that's easy, that's simple, and very, very inexpensive, but yet looks professional? Are you having troubles with your computer? Do you need some tech support help? Are you tired of being connected to India every time you pick up the telephone to get some help on a machine or on a website? The people to call is tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. T-U-X, like tuxedo, dash support, the word support, .com. These are the people to call. They can get you going. It won't cost you an arm and a leg. You can afford to work with these folks. They're professionals. They answer in plain English, and they can help you do things from a very, very basic, simple standpoint. If you have something that you want to do that's a complex project, well, they can handle that as well. But if you're like I am, when you're trying to put something up on the web or you need help with a computer, you really want somebody that speaks English. And you want it to be simple, and you don't want to have to pay an arm and a leg for it. And you want to deal with some good folks. Go to their website, tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. Something new at Radio Disclosure. We have been collecting items of interest.
something that you might want. And once a month, we are going to have a drawing and give away some of these items of interest. Now, if you'd like to get your name in the hat, write us an email. Go to radiodisclosure.com. That's radiodisclosure.com. Shoot us an email and tell us a little bit about yourself, and tell us that you're interested in the items of interest. We're going to do a drawing once a month, and several people that listen to Radio Disclosure are going to get something really cool. We look forward to hearing from you. Go to our website, radiodisclosure.com, and send us an email. And keep listening and tell your friends about Radio Disclosure. You're listening to Radio Disclosure. And now back to our guest, Jim Maroney, the author of The Extraterrestrial Answer Book. Let me ask you this question. What do you think about, and I know you take reports of UFOs and that sort of thing, but what about people who are doing things like, that are actually claiming contact? I mean, we deal with several folks here that I know personally that say that they're in constant contact, that they do things like they shine lights in the sky and they get lights shined back at them. They shine lights in the sky and things come down to where they're near them, and they obviously have sightings, even have friends and people around when this stuff happens. They take photographs. What about all of that?
Well, I think some of it has legitimacy to it. I'm not sure all of it does. Now, again, it's part of my skeptical mind that goes into it, into gear there, but I think that some of it has legitimacy to it. It seems to me, though, I'm not sure how this is all unfolding. I think these are the questions that really need to be looked at in a greater context of what's happening in the world around us. And one of the big struggles that we all run into is, tell me, is this legitimate? You know, and if it is legitimate, how does it fit into this bigger puzzle of contact or what's going on? It appears to me that these beings definitely want us to know that they exist. Now, the argument could also have been made that why didn't they just land on the White House lawn? And of course, the other, you know, my answer back is, well, so why would it be the White House lawn? Like, why would it not be in Parliament in Canada or in Australia? Or, well, then you go into all these other arguments, and the deeper you get into it, the more you realize that, well, you know, governments are really only a construct, a social construct of what we've decided to kind of manage our resources and manage our lives, and they're really put together there because of people. So ultimately, you know, people will change governments regardless of what is going to happen in the future. I mean, we have the power to change governments, even though sometimes it feels that we don't. You know, that's why people don't go and vote. But I think the ETs, what they want us to do is fundamentally address individually our own issues of spiritual development, making sure that we do what we know is right. And that will in turn change the world. That's really what I think is going to be going on. I think that answers your question, but I'm not sure.
Well, I guess the thing of it is that there's folks that plan out their star parties and whatnot, and they flash lights in the sky. I guess it kind of brings me around, and they get answers. I mean, I've actually witnessed some of this stuff, and it make you scratch your head. Because you wonder, well, what is this up to? I had Ed Grimsley on. Have you ever heard of Ed Grimsley?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Ed uses these Generation 3 night vision goggles. And I don't understand at all why there hasn't been more publicity surrounding these things. Because you can look up into the night sky, and I mean, you see all kinds of stuff going on. It's not like, you know, it isn't satellite activity, and it's not airplanes. I mean, you've got things flying in a formation up there that, you know, that are flying in formation, and they're traveling at speeds that are absolutely impossible for anything that we have on the ground. And then all of a sudden, those things will make a right-hand turn, a 90-degree, or they'll just simply scatter and go all in different directions. And it's like, what are we looking at? What is this? You know, why hasn't someone why isn't, I mean, Ed Grimsley does it. He's been on Coast. He's been on all these different shows. He's been on our show, you know, but it seems like if you would make the announcement, you know, if you went on a radio syndicated show that's on a bunch of stations and you say, hey, with vision generation 3 night vision glasses, you can see the ET activity, you would think that there would be an absolute, total, complete avalanche of people buying goggles and being out in their yards and staring up into the skies. I mean, why is it? I mean, it's almost like, to some degree, I want to have to say that it's almost like, in this case, I mean, and this is a specific thing, it's like we've been hypnotized or something. It's like there's this massive apathy of some sort. It's like there's no, you know, I really believe that if this would have happened 50 years ago, if Ed Grimsley had been around 50 years ago and Generation 3 night vision glasses had been around for 50 years ago, and this announcement would have been made or published in a newspaper, people would have just went completely crazy buying those glasses and staring into the sky trying to figure out what was going on. What is up with that? You got any clues? I don't have a clue. What is it?
Well, I certainly believe, you know, after my experience in 1987, not only did I realize these beings were here, but I realized that they were probably functioning in a way that was difficult for them to spot. So now that he's found out a way to be able to spot them and to be able to, you know, visualize them, I think one of the problems with disseminating that kind of information to the public and to major media is the fact that we've got so much information currently out there that it's hard sometimes to figure out what's good and what's bad. And I think that some people just said, you know what, it sounds maybe a little bit too crazy. I don't think that that could actually be happening. I don't think those things actually work. When they, in fact, they do. So it's it becomes apparent because, in fact, in Mexico, there was a flight of a aircraft, and this was from the Mexican military, and they were using infrared cameras to find planes that were smuggling drugs across the border, and when they came up across 11 objects that showed up in the infrared but were not available or were not, you know, visually available in the visual light spectrum, so you couldn't see them, but you can see them clearly on infrared, and you know, these objects were obviously extraterrestrial in origin. So how do you have something in front of you that you can't see unless you actually apply a particular camera, and then it's clearly it's there and it's moving around independently or flying in formation. So, you know, what the work that he did is that he just extrapolated that, you know, that evidence that has actually been, and it's clear, it's concise, it's there, you know, it's irrefutable. You know, this is what happened, this was what we visualized. I mean, and some people tried to explain it away as lightning, ball lightning. It's like, no, you know, there's no evidence to suggest that these pictures are ball lightning because these things were moving in formation, they were moving slow and with purpose.
Well, you know, so, I think today these off-the-wall explanations, like when Hynek came to Michigan and diagnosed the UFOs in the Ann Arbor area as being swamp gas, I think scientists are aware of the fact that that is a fatal mistake. You just can't do that today. If you do it today, you have just signed away your life, you know, because no one's going to be interested in hearing anything you've got to say. You can't go in and do these massive discounts. And of all things, I mean, being, you know, born and raised in Michigan, I mean, I realized that on the west side of Ann Arbor, people don't have problems with swamp gas mirages unless they have been imbibing in some of the wine from the west coast or the west side of the state, I should say. If they've had a little bit too much of that, then I can understand them having swamp gas mirages, you know. But this was a serious thing, and he wrote that off, and it really hurt him. It hurt his career big time. Because people knew better. Right. They were smarter than that. I mean, you know, Ann Arbor, big university town, you know, and these people are not stupid. And
you maybe hit on a great point, and that is the fact that this is what really gets me going, is the fact that, you know, people are not stupid. You know, and the fact that you're going to dumb me down this kind of evidence and information to the general public, all the fact on the basis that, well, the public is stupid, they're going to react in a stupid way, or they're just going to believe anything we tell them. That's just not the case. I mean, the vast, vast majority of people are smart. You know, we'll figure it out. You know, we know that we'll spend the time to investigate. We'll spend the time to listen. And that, I think, is really an important change that's happened over the years. And I've seen a much greater willingness for individuals to challenge our own belief systems, to try and, you know, we'll accept a different person's point of view, or at least we'll listen to them. And at the end of it, you know, we don't have to accept maybe their point of view, but at least we've given an opportunity for us to listen to them. And I think that's been changing. And I think that's one of maybe the great thing that's going to happen. I also believe that we're certainly in a better position now than we were many years ago to deal with the UFO phenomenon in a more, you know, responsible way. I don't believe that the current, you know, policies or lack of policies is any way that, you know, for us to continue to deal with this whole phenomenon. My goal really is to try and promote the idea of not just discussions on it, but also, you know, inform us about ways that we can effectively deal with the phenomenon in a way that's more responsible and address the needs of the individuals and the public at hand.
Well, you know, I guess there's folks out there that still do not believe that anything ever happened at Roswell. But I think that Roswell has served to be a real embarrassment to the United States government. And I think they would be very, very slow to repeat that process again. Because, I mean, there's been so much. I mean, Roswell, an obscure town that no one had even heard of, has now become, you know, a global phenomena. And people from all over the world travel to Roswell and are aware of it. Even the folks that don't, I mean, I don't think there's a person on, I don't know of anybody within the realm of the United States of America that if you walk up to them and you say Roswell, New Mexico, they don't know. They immediately they form this thing in their head, you know, and part of what forms in their head is government cover-up. I mean, that is the very first thing that pops in their head. Even the skeptics, there's an association with Roswell and government cover-up. And that's been a very, very bad thing because that has really taken a lot of credibility away from the United States government, and it's caused people to question everything. I mean, not just Roswell, but anything that the government has contact with. You know, how much truth are we really being told, and how much is being siphoned off the top and labeled something else? So I think that now let me ask a question. You know, let's talk about Ed Grimsley for a minute. These night vision Generation 3 goggles are very expensive. You know, I think that I don't know what they sell for, $3,000 or $4,000. I mean, I think they're somewhere in that vicinity. And I've been told that the night vision 2 glasses don't work. They don't do that. They don't do the same thing. You may be able to see some things, I guess, but not nowhere near what these are.
Right.
I guess the question is what I'm wondering about, and Ed is a very non-pretentious individual. If you've ever talked to him, you know, he's just fascinated by seeing this stuff in the sky. I mean, he's like a little kid with a pair of glasses. He's seeing these things, and some of the stuff he describes is really, really out there. Like, you know, he says all of a sudden you'll see one shoot out something that looks like a beam. It strikes another one, and it explodes into a million pieces. In other words, it's almost like seeing some sort of a Star Wars battle in space going on. And, you know, I'm wondering now what, you know, it brings question, and that is, what is that all about? I mean, is there conflict up there going on that we don't know about? I mean, is there some sort of conflict up in the heavens that's taking place that we're not privy to? I mean, what do you think about that? How does all this fit in?
I'm not sure exactly how it fits in. My personal feeling would be that we have to be really careful about the interpretation of the evidence that we have. So, I mean, shooting a beam and seeing something go into different lights might be an impression to us that, hey, something's just been hit by a laser and exploded. But it also might be actually, you know, a communication system going off to something else and having that go into different pieces, because we know these objects can actually, you know, break up and rejoin again. So I think we have to be careful about, like, how we're interpreting that. I doubt very much, at least, that there's going to be this big war going on, but, you know, I could be wrong. But certainly I can at least attest to the idea that there's obviously, you know, a presence up there. And how that really, I think if there's a real struggle currently, the struggle is with human beings. You know, it's with humanity. That's where the struggle is. I think that really the problem that these beings are facing is the fact that they are not here to just take our weapons away and say, okay, you guys can't play with nuclear weapons because you don't play nicely. That's just, I don't think it's going to happen. I think that, you know, human beings have to be the ones that want to put away the weapons. And that's the only way that that's going to happen. So the with respect to this, you know, other beings fighting with each other and those types of things, maybe that goes on. I don't know. But I think right now in our skies, I doubt that's happening. But like I said, I might be wrong.
Well, I mean, there's these pictures that exist of this stuff, you know, and I guess I'm not prone to believe that they're trumped up in some sort of a program like Photoshop for video or whatever. I think that what we're seeing is legitimate. But, I mean, of course, we don't know what in the world or what...
What we're seeing.
Yeah, we don't know what in the world out there they're shooting at. If that is really actually something being shot at, I mean, it could be an asteroid. Yeah. It could be some other space debris or something. And we don't know, but... It's but I thought you may have a handle on that because I certainly don't, and it sounds intriguing to me. What about sightings early on in your life? You know, I believe this, and this is something I did want to discuss. I believe there's certain people that are just prone to UFO sightings, UFO abductions, and that's in a way it's kind of unfortunate because those folks get labeled as crazy. It's kind of like, well, why is it you have 172 pictures of flying saucers and I have yet to shoot one? You know, I mean, you understand what I'm saying. In other words, and it causes a lot of consternation to the person that is. But I happen to believe there's a reason why George Adamski had an experience. There's a reason why you've had an experience. And there's a reason why other folks have. It seems, though, that the folks that have had experiences have numbers of them, and they're also the folks that have sightings and that sort of thing. Does this hold true, or am I reading something here?
I think you're right. I think you're onto something. Maybe it has to do with the fact that these beings are aware of... These things, when they want people to know that they exist, they actually do make an effort to show themselves in different ways. So one of them might be, okay, you know what, we're going to let you know that we exist, but we're going to show ourselves to you. And it's kind of like having a car driving by and saying, see, you know, here we are. And they allow the individual to actually see them and observe them. And then they might, you know, years later have a direct encounter experience. So you know, there's times that it seems that there's more than one encounter that takes place. There's, you know, definitely planning that goes into that type of thing. And so it's not unusual then to find specific individuals that have more than one encounter, more than one experience, or more than one sighting. And that seems to be fairly consistent. The other part of it is that, you know, people who are, in order to spot a UFO, you really have to be dedicated to looking into the skies all the time. So you almost have to have it as an obsession. And people with that particular kind of obsession do see and witness and photograph and video photograph, you know, particular objects that are obviously extraterrestrial in origin. So I think you're right. You know, definitely individuals have that propensity to see and to have experiences more than maybe other individuals.
Well, it could all be tied together. Like, for example, what is it that causes someone to stare into the sky all the time? Could it be a previous experience or a previous sighting? Once you've seen something like that, immediately you realize this object does not belong here. It's not anything normal. There's something in your gut that says this is not an airplane. This is not a satellite. This is something else. And then you have to reckon with that somehow. In other words, now you have to somehow, in your brain, your mind, your psyche, all that has to somehow reconcile, you know, and come up with how do I justify this being in my world, you know. And
yeah, well, and you're right, because even in 1987, after my experience, one of the things that happened to me is that I would spend more time, like much more time, looking up at the sky, where I never did before. Then I would spend like maybe an hour looking up at the sky and to the stars, and, you know, just seeing if I could see anything. I think it's just a natural, you know, condition of what happens after, you know, you have such an experience, trying to put it in context to the world around you.
But let's talk about your situation. This happened to you in 1987, but now as a child or young, in your younger years and your teen years and all that kind of stuff, yeah. I'd almost be willing to bet that at some point in time, you had some sightings.
Yes, I did, and they occurred, I had one sighting. It was only one real UFO sighting, I think, in my entire life. I can honestly say that just one UFO sighting happened when I was, 26 or 27. And then I had that abduction encounter experience about three years later. So that's essentially what happened. I was able to see something that was in the sky. And it wasn't like, you know, I couldn't see windows or anything like that, but it was definitely... I'll call it like a rice or a cylindrically shaped object. I wasn't the only one who saw it. There were some other people who actually saw this object.
Well, we've had, I've got actually on video here just recently, it's been maybe a year ago, right here in the Nashville area, like four or five objects were caught on video. And these people were just driving along in the car. They happened to look over and see it. They pulled off the road and started videoing these things. And then within just a short period of time, there were all kinds of cars pulled off the road, making a video of these objects in the sky. And the interesting thing was, is there was not one mention of this. I mean, this is a major interstate, Highway 40. Everybody knows about a Highway 40 because it runs across the country. But as it passes through Nashville, at one point there were probably 6, 7, 8, 10 cars off the road, people standing out there with video cameras, videoing. I don't know, there must have been 6, 7 objects in the sky, and they looked like they were doing some sort of formation or gyrations or something. You could tell that they weren't normal aircraft. If I had to guess watching the video, I didn't see these things personally, but watching video, I don't think they were experimental aircraft. I don't think they were something from Fort Campbell, Kentucky. I don't know what they were. But you have 10 people pulled off the road on I-40 in Nashville, and then not one mention of this incident on any of the local television stations. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. So I don't know. We were driving along one night, and I saw something unusual in the sky. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was a UFO or whatever, but I thought, well, you know, I'm going to call the television station. I was absolutely appalled. I got on my cell phone and I went to the mobile internet sites. Not one of the television stations had a local a news number listed for you to call if you wanted to report news or something. I don't know how they survive without those things, but evidently they're smug enough to think they don't need them. But I gave up. So I'm wondering now. I wonder how many UFOs are spotted, how many people actually see these things, and yet they have no outlet anywhere to report them. And if there is the outlet, it's so buried that trying to get to the phone number or the address or the email address or the website is just almost impossible.
You're right. And if you look at in North America, because we don't have a coordinated UFO reporting center, and people are not really encouraged or enticed to report, what we find is that only about 10% of all sightings ever get reported. And out of those ones that get reported, they get distributed anywhere. Sometimes they'll call the local police, they'll just leave that, and it doesn't go anywhere else. Or they'll call the state police, it doesn't go anywhere else. Or they'll call a radio station, and the radio station says, no, you know what, we've got other things happening. Or they'll call, you know, TV, like a program, and they'll just say, or you can't get through. So... and they'll just give up. And that's one of the things I think that is really underemphasized, is the fact that what we're seeing in reports is actually just a very small fraction of the number of reports and sightings that people actually see. And, the fact that it even gets to my website is remarkable, to be honest with you. And that's, you know, the only reason why it gets to my website is because people have to have internet access. They have to type in the right, you know, words to basically find the website, and then they have to do the report. And so, you know, how many people are going to be able to do that and take the time to do that? Some people, many people will see these objects, even if they get them on film or anything else, they just, you know, retain them for their own private interest and own private viewing. They don't really want to get, you know, to disseminate it to anybody. And there's a reason for that as well, because we see there's a lot of trepidation that occurs because people get scared or nervous about being called crazy or wacko, you know, if they give this information and say, look, this is what I saw. And some people say, you know what, I just don't need it. I know to me and for myself that it's real. I don't really need to, you know, risk being called crazy just because I saw this thing, even though I have video footage of it. So those are some of the concerns that occur. So, like, once again, we only see a very small percentage of the actual sightings.
Well, that's another thing, too, I've noticed with folks that have sightings. Once they have one, or once they have an experience, from that point on, they really just don't care whether somebody believes that they had the experience or not. I mean, it's kind of strange. The same personality type who is a total skeptic, who thinks there's nothing up there at all, that it's all a bunch of hooey, they have a sighting, a close encounter sighting, where something's up close and personal. And maybe they witness a few things, like their car won't start and lights go on and off and all kinds of things happen around them. And they see this thing. They witness this thing. The very next day, they could care less who believes them and who does not. Now, they may choose not to say anything to anybody because they just don't want to have to go through all the hoopla of explaining it and going through being laughed at or criticized or over-questioned, you know, by people. I mean, they may just clam up and say, I'm not going down that road. But by the same token, they don't care if someone does ask them the question. They don't really care whether you or I or anyone else believes their story, because they know it's real and they know how extreme it is. And I think somehow something happens to the human psyche in all this. I don't know. Have you found that to be the case?
Well, I certainly have experienced it myself, to be honest with you. I mean, I felt that, you know, I would only tell people I could really, really trust. And even then, you know, I was very careful about what I told them. In fact, I had friends for years, and I didn't tell them anything about my experiences. It's not something you have a coffee with somebody and start talking about right away. There's a whole pile of other types of relationship issues that you have to secure before, you know, you start going off to talking about something like UFOs. And, you know, UFO and the whole UFO phenomenon is just one component to my life. You know, it's not all-encompassing. It's not overriding everything else. I have other business, you know, interests. You know, I have family, a wife. These are things that are really important in my life. And the UFO thing, hey, it's something on the side. I believe it's important. I know it's important. I know it's something that we're all going to have to deal with at some point in time in our lives. And it's something that's unfolding. I just want to make sure that I've done what I think I need to do to make this whole transition easier for all of us. I don't want to be in a situation where I regret passing through this life knowing that I could have done something to make something better, and I didn't. And that's really the only reason why I do what I do and take the risks of, you know, being called crazy or wacko and all those other things. And I don't even mind it anymore. It's like, you know, if you're going to call me that, that's fine, because everybody's entitled to their own opinion. I know that in the end, that it'll come out in the wash. You know, I know that and I'll live to see it, that this whole phenomenon will prove itself.
Well, let me ask you.
Think it's gonna be,
Since your experience, I mean, do you feel, I hate to say this because I don't want it to sound wrong, but do you feel you've been given a mission due to your experience, or do you feel that you've just kind of taken on a mission because of your experience?
I think I've taken on the mission because of my experience, but it's a mixed feeling. Because when you think about it, you go like, well, you know, do I need to do this? The answer is no, I don't need to do this. It takes resources, it takes time, it takes commitment. So I don't need to do this. So then the question is, well, why are you doing it? Well, the question is because I think it's the right thing to do. In my regular profession, I teach health and safety, and that's what I've instructed at universities and colleges and in programs. And I always see the benefit of creating a situation, an environment where people can go to work and come home, you know, safe. They can come home alive. They don't have to suffer injuries. I can see, in a sense, a similar quality to this whole UFO phenomenon, that we have the ability to educate people about what's happening, to provide good information and good evidence, and then we can, you know, construct a way to effectively deal with this very challenging, you know, new reality. So for me, I think it's just kind of wrapped up into who I am. I don't think I would be good at just standing by knowing I could do something to make a difference in the world, to make the world a better place, and not do it. I think, you know, I need to do something. And maybe that, I guess, is my mission.
Well, I wondered if something like that is born out of course, you know, folks encounter adversity in life, and then they overcome the adversity, and then, of course, it becomes their mission at that point to help other people do the same thing. So, I mean, I didn't know, and I've had people say that they believe that E.T. has given them the mission, you know, and I've kind of wondered about that. You know, I wondered I don't know. I mean,
No, you know, they never told me, Jim, this is what we want you to do. Never. What they do is that they show you things sometimes. They'll show you stuff. And that's it. They don't tell you what to do. They never told me what to do. They show you something. And then you make up your mind about what you want to do about it. The wonderful thing that they have the ability to do, and this is really extraordinary, they have the ability to take you to... Okay, I don't know how this is going to sound. It's going to sound bizarre, but because you're dealing with a different consciousness, they can see the future. So what they'll do is that when they're interacting with you, they have the ability to, just the way we reach out and touch somebody's hand, they have the ability to reach out and touch your mind. And in that process, they, you know, 1 minute you're here, and the next minute you're standing with somebody. It's like a friend, and it's actually this being that you're with, but they look completely different, and you're in a different place, and you're observing something, and you're seeing it. And it's not like watching a movie theater. It's like you're actually there. And so what they do is they show these images, and they show you what's happening or what the future is like and what they see, what they perceive is going to be happening. And then they leave you with those, and that's it. They just walk, you know, they just, here's what we're showing you. And they'll let you decide about how you're going to interpret what you just seen, you know, what you're going to do to, you know, from that point in time, which is, I think, a very, very good way of doing it. I wouldn't want anybody kind of telling me what to do. I guess maybe that's just the kind of guy I am. Don't tell me what to do. But I really feel that there's a gentle guidance to this whole thing. You know, they want to say, hey, you know what, you guys have got some really difficult things that you're going to be going through. This is not about them. You know, this is not about them. They're going to be around, you know, long after we're passed away. So this is all about, you know, where humanity is going to be going.
Well, you know,
and I think they just, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, early contactees, George Adamski and so many others described, well, of course, back then they referred to them as the Space Brothers.
Right.
And they described them as having very, very much human characteristics and appearing human. Long, flowing blonde hair. Descriptions in Adamski's books like finely chiseled facial features, you know, things that were described like that. Now, here's a question I have. Do you think, all right, first off, did you ever encounter any one of the ETs that were human, that looked human and looked just like us?
No.
Okay, now here's the other question. Here's the other question. Do you think that they have the ability to appear that way if they wish? And do you think that may have been what was going on with the early contactees? Maybe the early contactees were not ready and couldn't handle seeing a gray, so to speak. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's 100% affirmative on that. I really do believe that. I believe that these beings have this ability because they can. If you ever, again, I'll go back to the idea of seeing somebody on stage going through hypnosis and how they see things and that don't exist or that are not there. You know, if the guy says, "Okay, you don't have your clothes on," you know, and the person runs around to the stage going, "Oh my God, I don't have my clothes." It's very similar, I think, with these beings have the ability to, is that when they're in this hypnotic state and they're linking with your mind, they have the ability to give you thoughts and to also change your perception. Now, whether or not it's just us perceiving them differently or whether or not they have the actual ability to physically change their appearance, I don't know, but I do know that one of those two options is certainly there, maybe even both. So I certainly believe that they have the ability to, for us to, you know, perceive them differently. In fact, if you and I were in a room and one of these beings came in, I could never guarantee that we would be able to, as lucid as we were, to sit down and draw the same being. I'm not sure that that's how we would perceive it. I think there's a possibility we would actually be perceiving it differently.
Well, we've heard, you know, the books have been written, movies have been done, Aliens Among Us, and so on and so forth. You know, I guess my question is, I wonder if we do not have these presences right in our everyday society, but however we perceive them as being human, just like us, and we absolutely don't recognize them in their specific place or spot.
Yeah, I'm going to be reluctant to say. I'm reluctant to agree to that, and say that that's actually happening because I haven't met anything like that. Like, I haven't experienced anything like that. I've experienced very distinct non-human beings, and they're so different than us in some ways, and yet there are some similarities, you know, but they're so dramatically different, I'm not sure that that's something that they would want to do. I think they could interact with human beings quite easily, and they've been able to show that they can do that without having to walk around amongst us, you know. The kind of contact that they appear to be desiring is a very intimate contact. So they really want to know what makes you tick, you know, who you really are. And that's what entices them. That's what they want to know. That's what they think is going to benefit this whole, you know, relationship between us and them.
Well,
what may bridge the great differences.
What about this, in your experience, and of course in the writing of your book and whatnot, What do you think about this? What if they're not really extraterrestrial? What if these folks are? What if what you experienced are people from a different time? Have you thought about that? Or have you ever entertained that thought at all?
I did. You know, I did entertain that thought, but it's a thought that's almost too radical for me to get my head around. I know, despite the fact that I've had these experiences, I believe that it's a more rational, maybe a safer explanation to say that they just come from a different place than what we come from, a different world, that they understand the universe in ways that we don't. They understand the workings of the universe. You know, they understand the creator much better than we do. They have a closer relationship with the creator than we do. And that, in turn, means that I don't think they come from a different time, but I have seen it actually visually seen them move in ways that just defy explanation. In other words, they were moving fast. Like, have you ever seen something on super fast forward? That's exactly how I've seen them move in one situation. I can't explain that. Like I said, nothing can move that fast. I've never seen things move that fast. And it was jerky and, you know, it was incredible. And I was wondering whether or not my perception of this visual thing that I was seeing was being influenced, but the sounds were completely consistent with what I was seeing, which would suggest to me that what I was seeing was actually happening. And
well,
what I saw them, what I mean is that they maybe have some influence over time, but I don't know how that, I don't think they come from a different time.
Well, let me make this suggestion here real quick, and then we'll have to call it a day here because we're closely running out of time. But what if the reason why they pick on certain people and why only certain people seem to have the abundance of experiences, and the reason why they're doing medical procedures and all that kind of stuff, maybe if they are from the future, they may be altering a human body that otherwise maybe whose offspring would have serious biological problems at some future point in time, or a whole group of people that would, or maybe what they're doing is coming back and making changes that would enhance the future, if that makes any sense at all. I mean, now that would explain to me why only certain people seem to have, maybe it's only necessary to do things to certain individuals to circumvent certain disasters in the future. Now, this is just conjecture on my part, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, I thought about this and I thought, well, that, you know, kind of that does follow a kind of a line of thinking, if that makes any sense.
I think your line of thinking is not too far off, actually. I believe that they are here. Certainly, there are medical components to it, which suggest that there has to be some kind of biological reason, you know, for these changes, and that they've determined what those reasons are. We just don't know what they are exactly yet. But I think it's tied into, in a general way, into how we're going to evolve in the future, or maybe it's the salvation of humanity in some way. Some way it's linked to that. We just don't know exactly the distinct parameters around that whole process. I think that's going to be something we could certainly investigate in the future if we had more information on it. But it seems to me that that they want to interact with us in a way that's also biological. So that's, it's a major... See, one of the things that's really strange about this whole contact experience is that people are allowed to remember this physical component, this medical component to this experience. And they're allowed to remember for a reason. And that is because these beings believe it's important. So it must be important to the future relationship. That's the only way I can deduce it. And the other part of it is that they have the ability to find individuals that they feel that there would be a better relationship with, I think. So I think that there's a lot of people who've had contact, but maybe it's only a timing factor that's in place. So, you know, we'll allow you to remember now, Jim, you know, and then other people will remember at a later date. I don't think there's any... I don't see myself as any better or worse than anybody else. I just happen to have these experiences, and that's basically...
There was one note in the information that I got on you, and it was a question that remained that I was going to ask, and we've kind of covered all kinds of subjects, but the question is where do most sightings occur? I would find that interesting to know.
Yeah. The most interesting sightings appear over military installations, and it seems to be they get attracted to nuclear facilities or places where they have nuclear weapons actually stored. But lately, we've been seeing many more sightings over heavily populated areas, and it seems to be that they're a lot less shy now of showing themselves. So I think there's some kind of plan unfolding that we can see. I don't think these are just random sightings. I think that there's an actual distinct plan in place to unveil themselves to us. So regardless of whether or not we have to wait for governments to actually tell us that that they exist, I think these beings are on a plan to show that they exist, regardless, without any question in the end of the day.
So they're going to beat the government is what they're going to do.
I think the government needs a good beating every now and again.
But the thing of it is,
I think they're going to beat the government to the finish line.
I think just about anything or anybody is faster than the government, at least our government here. Anyhow, Jim Maroney, I want to thank you for joining us. The book is called The Extraterrestrial Answer Book, UFOs, Alien Abductions, and the Coming ET Presence. Where can this book be found?
At any Borders or any bookstore, it's available. And you can also check out my website at AUFOSG.com.
Okay, give that to us again, because that went by rather fast.
Sure. AUFOSG.com.
Now, is that an acronym? Does it stand for something?
Yeah, it's actually, you can just check it on the website, and it's produced, the book itself, maybe the simpler way is saying the book is produced by Hampton Roads.
I meant the website, the AF, I mean, see, oh. What is that?
The acronym, it's the Alberta UFO Study Group.
Alberta UFO Study Group, so if somebody goes into Google and just puts in Alberta UFO, they're probably going to find their way to that website, and they'll find their way
Absolutely.
To the book as well. Very, very good.
Well,
thank you so much for joining us. It's been extremely pleasurable talking to you. Very informative, and you'll have to come back on the show soon. I'm sure that as time goes on, there's going to be another book in the future.
There will be, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for the opportunity as well. I really enjoyed it.
That's all the time we have this week for Radio Disclosure. Be sure and check us out on the web at radiodisclosure.com. That's radiodisclosure.com. And also on iTunes and Zune. Zune Marketplace, that is. Tune in again next week, same time, same station, for another Radio Disclosure.